When you Betfair on football, you get daily rewards, so any day can be a big deal. So whether it's a lower league match day, a top flight derby day, or a Champions League superstar showdown day, this week we're doubling our daily rewards. Get a €10 free bet when you bet €20 worth of multiples or bet builders. Double daily rewards, because we're Betfair.
Max €10 free bet per day. Each bet must have at least one selection of minimum odds of 1.5 or 1 to 2 or more. Free bet valid 24 hours on multiples or bet builders. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Visit gamblingcare.ie.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome everyone to 21st Century Football, where over the next couple of weeks, to coincide with Euro 2020, we'll be having a look back at the previous Euros here at 21st Century Football. Joining me for this adventure and to chat Euro 2012 is Adam Brown and Jay Motti. Adam, I'll start with you. Where were you? Oh, what were you doing?
I was on all day when this tournament started.
Were you?
Yeah, it was in Greece, a nice little fishing village called Pefkos. Yeah, it was nice. lovely little part of the world. So I think the group stage I was there, and then no spoilers here, what happens in the tournament. But when the latter stage I was at home. But yeah, it was probably must have been 20s, mate. Early 20s.
A romantic holiday?
With mates.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've not heard of that as a sort of like go-to. Your
Cavos. Yeah. We were quite a bit more cultured. We stayed out of it, and then we've travelled in rather than. Ah. Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm a bit of a, you know.
No, go on.
A bit more cultured than the.
Yeah.
You know, a bit too highbrow for the rough and tumble of Cavos.
Me, Cavos 2009. Jay, what about you?
My life was going really well because I was 32 years old living.
You
want
beef for 92?
I was fucking my mum and dad's for a bit.
That's all right. You got to say.
I was in between. Flats.
What was your first? What was your first lad's holiday?
My first lad's holiday was Magaluf in 1996.
Fucking hell!
I know. 16 years old, it was carnage. All 16-year-old lads going on holiday just finished school. Went to Magaluf for a week.
Were there planes at that time? Or?
Yeah. Well, we had to get a raft. 2 and 6 it cost us.
If you listen to the previous podcast, that puts into perspective, Jay. You were on a lad's holiday at 16. He was chilling in the park. So don't worry. Yeah,
that's a good point, eh? Come on, let's have it right.
And I was on my own, which you are allowed to do. Right, to start this, we're not here to talk about lads' holidays. That's another episode. But today we are starting with Wikipedia. Adam, you've got a fact for me. Where and when?
Yeah, 14th Euros. It was held on the 8th of June through to the 1st of July and co-hosted for the first time Poland and Ukraine co-hosted tournaments, which we'd seen previously like in World Cups and stuff, like the co-host. How would you feel about the co-hosted tournaments?
Not too arsed, I think, with this one.
Right. Great chat.
No, what I was going to say is on this one as well, this was the first sort of one where, how old would I have been? I could have gone. But some of our mates went, but everyone was worried about Poland and Ukraine and the thugs and everything, weren't they?
Yeah.
Which never really materialised again. All this scaremongering, isn't it?
There's always a bit of scaremongering in tournaments, isn't there?
You don't want it.
Do you remember the logo? Will, you're usually quite big on this sort of thing. I remember it at the top of my head. Was it some sort of like a flower, but the two sort of petals on the side, one was the Ukraine flag and one was the Poland flag.
It was
meant to be a flower. I think that's what it was meant to be. Well, obviously, I had to incorporate two flags into it. I thought you'd be into that, Will. It's usually your
domain. I was probably just too busy drinking or something. I didn't drink till I was 18. Jay, what have you got for me? I believe you got the teams.
I have got the teams. So you've got Spain, Holland, Germany, Italy, England, obviously. Russia, Croatia, Greece, Portugal, Sweden, Denmark, France, Czech Republic, and last but not least, Republic of Ireland.
Which I really like to see. What are your guys' thoughts having other home nations at a tournament?
Yeah, this was Trapattoni's Republic of Ireland, wasn't it? Which was, you know, it was, I mean, we'll get into how it works out for them, but yeah, there was a lot of fanfare about the fact they got there. And I do like, you know, the Republic of Ireland. We've got some Irish heritage, obviously, from Manchester, we all have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it might be, my great-grandma's from Killaloe or something, I don't know.
Oh, lovely part of the world. And I've got the Republic of Ireland produced an official song, The Rocky Road to Poland, recorded by a collaboration of Irish performers, quickly reached number one in Ireland and stayed there for 3 weeks. And that is a sort of prelude to how they got on in the tournament, I imagine.
Do you think they should have just put in brackets and Ukraine in the song title? Right. I don't know if someone wrote it and gone, you told me it's in Ukraine as well. Don't mention it. It's recording now. Right. It's too late.
About that.
Got a couple of lyrics here, Will, from the song, if you want
is
any
of these.
Is
something you'd spin on your show? Do you still spin?
Yeah, not really. It's a term, isn't it? He's not physically spinning, he's just pressing a button.
Did they ever used to spin?
They used to spin, mate, when the old disc jockeys.
What, like from one to that, bagging like that?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, that's more like turntable.
My only sort of knowledge of this is, what's the one on the boat? The film that's on.
The boat that rocked.
That's mine. Sort of like. Anyway, what are you saying?
I've got a couple of lyrics here. I mean, obviously Trapattoni gets a lot of references in the lyrics. I think I'd love to actually. We should really have a listen to it at some point. Hope within our hearts, we can win the trophy. We're all part of Trapattoni's army. Get behind the team. Hear the Irish scream. Come on, you boys in green. Ireland's bouncing back again. Seems like a missed opportunity to rhyme that. At the end.
odd rhyming scheme, but we'll go with it.
So there you go. I mean, no reference to Ukraine at all.
Well, there you go. Poland was the country, and England were there with a squad. Looking at it, lads, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it, Ad? But looking at this England squad, it was a minor miracle that we got out of the groups.
Yeah, I mean, keepers, this is where Joe Hart became our proper first choice. Rob Green was in there as well. Probably quite lucky to be in there after the 2010.
Yeah, very lucky.
Yeah. John Ruddy, classic third choice keeper. What are you saying about defenders, Jay?
Well, the big sort of story for me ahead of this one was Rio not going on it. Mm. And there was the talk that perhaps because him and John Terry weren't exactly on speaking terms, that Roy Hodgson had made the decision not to have Rio in the squad. And also...
So bring the racist.
Bring the racist, leave the victim of racism's brother at home. And then what made it worse was the fact Gary Cahill got injured, if you remember. So it's like, well, now you've got to take Rio. And he took Martin Kelly, I think. Who barely played for Liverpool. And he was like, oh, well, he's the future. So, and I think, Martin Kelly is warming Crystal Palace's bench for the last 5 years, whatever. So that was the big sort of defensive intrigue, shall we say.
I'm a big sort of stickler for squad numbers. I remember that when Gary Cahill dropped out, I'm sure he was number five and Martin Kelly ended up being number five and it really annoyed me.
Because
you look back on the squads even now and you're thinking, he's done well there to get the five shirt. If you don't know the full story, you don't know the full backstory, you think to yourself, wow, Martin Kelly must have been unbelievable.
Rio's number as well. Even worse.
It's bad.
You've got to have your best player. You've got to have your best player.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But it was weird, Roy Hodgson, as well, because you remember the old Oxlade-Chamberlain thing where he picked Oxlade-Chamberlain, who at the time was probably about 18. And I remember him explaining it, saying, oh, he did really well for Arsenal against the likes of Pirlo and Ambrosini when they played, was it Milan? And then someone had to point out to him that neither of those players played against Arsenal when he played him. He was just like, it was
like
a good indication.
Yeah, from Mike Bassett,
it was a good indication that Roy Hodgson sometimes might talk some rubbish.
And this was as well, correct me if I'm wrong, gents, was this the sort of renaissance of Scott Parker as well? Had he come off the back of winning the PFA player?
Was it the Football Writers? Did he win the Football Writers?
Yeah. For Spurs. So we sort of, because one of the things that had been labelled against England, wasn't it, was that we didn't have a proper CDM back in the day and he was sort of supposed to fill that void and then Frank and Steve were supposed to go forward.
Yeah, that was, obviously that had been going since 2004, early, we need a holding midfielder.
Still going now, isn't it? We still have this conversation now.
We need a sitting midfielder. Yeah. But it's like, we need a sitting midfielder, and Scott Parker, he was probably relatively kind of late onto it in his career.
Late 20s, early 30s.
So we had him in there. Gareth Barry as well was someone who'd been used quite a lot. And he was like,
remember him, he was injured, wasn't he, in 2010 and we took him anyway.
Yeah.
I'll never forgive him against Germany.
I was at that game, the Germany game, where he was just walking past him.
I'll never forgive him for that. Because he could have done a lot more, Jay. And he just went in two-footed and he missed the tackle. And then I think it was Pidot. Anyway,
so then you've got... obviously Oxlade-Chamberlain, Scott Parker, Stuart Downing was in there. He seemed to be around this era perennially, just always in the squads. He was someone that they used to always kind of throw on and try and put the crosses in. Ashley Young as well, was, I think it was his first tournament for
England. This was the one where Steven Gerrard said Ashley Young could be our secret weapon. I remember that.
Ashley Young, I think, gets an unfair rap. One, because he played for Villa, but even at that time, even that Villa team was,
Well, I know you don't answer me to go on about it, but he was very unlucky this season, Ashley Young, because United... drew the league, we say.
Was it United at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. And that season, towards the end of that season, he had a very good run. He scored. I remember getting a brace.
Playing
on the left
as well.
Yeah, he scored a couple of goals at Spurs to get us a win, but obviously because we didn't win the league, it wasn't thought of with fondness.
He's had a very good career, hasn't he, Ashley Young? But
even now, like, well, obviously went to win it, didn't he? The one,
So he was, for me, he was one of the ones that I remember seeing this squad. I thought, it's quite decent that they're throwing him in there. James Milner, again, they got a lot of like similar kind of hard-working midfielders,
vanilla.
But not players that are going to kind of do something, you know, compared to like modern-day England squad where you've got these players who might do something and, you know, grab the game out of the scruff of its neck or whatever. We don't have any of them. Strikers, we've got four there. Andy Carroll, Jermaine Defoe, Wayne Rooney, Danny Welbeck.
If we wanted to draw every game 0-0, this would have been the perfect spot.
I mean, a lot of the, like, Welbeck and Andy Carroll, you're very young at this point, aren't they?
But even still, just on Andy Carroll, that's like one of your Martin Kelly situation, isn't it? If you were an alien and came back now and you went, Andy Carroll was probably one of the first names on the team sheet, you'd be like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, what's happened?
But he was our hope, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was so different as well, wasn't he? The other players.
Well, this was like...
Get your head on that, son.
This was the post-Crouch kind of era as well, wasn't it? So we've been used to... I mean, Crouch's record for England had been really good, hadn't it, previously? So... We're kind of accustomed to having a big man up top, weren't we, really? I loved Andy Carroll in this era. I thought he was brilliant. Genuinely. I mean, I watched that. We'll get onto the game soon, but he scored that header. I was like, this guy's unbelievable. I was like, if we play to his strengths, get the crosses in. We've got Stuart Downing on. Get Downing on. Get him on now.
Is this the time, around the time of his £35 million move, which in those days was a lot of money.
It was
like
a hell of a lot of money.
Newcastle to Liverpool.
Yeah, it would have been, especially when they'd sold Torres for 50 and signed him for 35.
Also, gents, on the standby list, one very notable name on there as well. Butland, obviously he was playing for Birmingham at the time, which is sort of my only vested interest in the squad.
Yeah, I mean, we can just gloss over that. Yeah, we won't go into the standby.
Right, we'll start with Group A, and there was Czech Republic, Greece, Russia, Poland, and gents. We've done a lot of Euros episodes. Greece have either been amazing or terrible.
Yes.
And this time they're back, baby. Karagounis, one of them players that I feel like is going to be in every episode, Ad, scores a late half-time winner, if that's a thing.
I've never heard that before. Half-time winner. May as well go home, lads. It's over.
Put that in. There's no coming back from here. You're 45.
He's just won it.
We're done here. Czech Republic and Greece to go through. And again, you know, we're sort of building these narratives as a team. Czech Republic just come and just offer something, don't they?
Yeah, which does spook me a little bit because you just don't know what you're going to get, do you, with Czech Republic? We've said this before. They seem to have a habit of just having a couple of decent players who can just kind of make stuff happen, and you just don't know. There's always an unknown quantity, aren't they? So obviously done well there. I was going to say it's a fairly weak group that as well, though, to be fair to them. Will,
yeah, I think going into it you just said anyone could have got through, but again, you know, home nations we like to look out for, they're out.
Sad, that, isn't it?
2 points,
not even a win. I think for the home fans to celebrate.
Going into the final game, they could have gone through, but they didn't. And Czech Republic and Greece go through.
I'd love to know how old some of those Greece players were, because I swear they're the same ones from Euro 2004. Like Karagounis played, didn't it? And Gekas, I'm sure that rings a bell as well.
Must have been. Maybe they just kept the 2004 squad and went, if you want to play, you can play. No matter how old you are.
Our most successful team ever. Yeah. You're back in. Go on.
You keep it going. Right, let's move on to Group B, which was a very tough group. Germany, Portugal, who coincidentally share another group this year, with Netherlands and Denmark. Again, some fantastic... Some players' names that are synonymous with major tournament football. So whereas Miroslav Klose was the sort of... your 2000 striker. Mario Gomez seemed to just step it up at this time, didn't he?
His scoring records are absolutely insane. It's ridiculous as well.
I remember this was sort of the era or the birth of Twitter arguments for me.
Was it?
Yeah, this was when it started to become a thing in my life.
Your Twitter from 2012, I bet there's some good NFTs in there.
There's none left, I've deleted them all. I had a clear out in 2018. But no, I remember, because I used to have this thing about Mario Gomez where I didn't really rate him.
Right.
And it's like
the car,
and
then,
yeah, you put that out there on Twitter.
Yeah,
and
then I remember, I think it was the I think it was the Champions League final against Chelsea, arguing with people. He's not all that. Oh, look at his stats. He's how he, you know, he gets like his goal score record's decent, but in a big game, he's either player that you want.
Yeah.
I wasn't a massive fan, but he did. He, you know, he was capable, especially in a tournament like this.
Showed you who it
had,
didn't
he? He had like his fitness is always horrendous. Always injured, wasn't he? But yeah. So, I was like, how is he scoring when he's not even? He's injured. The next thing, he's got an hat trick. What? He's back. So he's one of them players that would just grab a goal. There's always one group in every tournament as well, Will, that gets called the group of death, obviously.
Yes.
Fair to say, this is that group.
Yeah, 100%, it? Yeah.
Netherlands, who we saw in the previous tournament, who won all three games, it was their turn to have a shocker because they lost all three.
That is madness, isn't it? You wouldn't have saw that one coming. I mean, yes, it's a group of death, but Netherlands always turn up in a tournament to a certain degree, at least in the group stages, but they just got absolutely battered.
Also, as well, I saw Nicholas Bentner score twice, and this was the Euros where he had the Paddy Power boxes on, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
And he got fined 50, 60 grand, which is still more than all the racists get fined today.
Yes, you get more for wearing boxes than for racially abusing someone. That makes sense.
Also, Will, Helder Postiga scored
again. No, you
saw that, yeah. How is he there?
And he had a t-shirt saying, Daniel Levy, are you listening now? Yeah. And he wasn't.
10 years later.
Yeah, believe me. Crone Deli as well, which was someone you could get really cheap on Football Manager as an attacking midfielder.
Seems very Football Manager.
Yeah, sort of fell in love with him. So Netherlands and Denmark went home, which meant Germany and Portugal progressed, which takes us to Group C. And the bloody Spaniards are at it again. Would you believe it? They finished top of the group with 7 points. But again, this is a tough group because, I mean, Croatia are in that bracket, aren't they? They've got to quarterfinals, semi-finals, and I don't know what I was going to say.
And a final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and never. A final, yeah.
Yeah, against France, wasn't it? Yeah.
So you got it in the order there, Will, and I was like, why did you stop?
I just thought England got to the final of the World Cup.
Yeah, you'd have read about that.
We didn't.
Someone mentioned that to you, well, trust me.
Did we get...
but yeah, Spain kicking on again, aren't
you? Could argue this was a kind of a group of death, though, Will, couldn't you, in a way?
Because the Republic of Ireland and Sean St. Ledger.
Exactly, mate, exactly. When you got in there, anything's possible. But, you know, Croatia notoriously do well at tournaments.
Yes.
We've seen that. Italy and Spain, you'd kind of instantly kind of earmark as the two teams that are going to go through as first and second. And the odds were stacked against the Republic of Ireland. Bad draw, that. Bad draw.
Do you think that, Jay, that they almost would have liked that? Go, no, they'd have wanted a better group, but when they saw the group, they'd have gone, fucking free it, let's have it.
Yeah, you think so. I always felt a bit sorry for Ireland because there was all this sort of talk at the time. I remember they gave him Trapattoni, I think, a massive contract. Like, they'd really spent heavily on him. And this was like, you know, when they got into the Euros, it was like, right, it's paid off and we're going to do something here. And he's, you know, he's a tactical genius. And, you know, his tactical genius with the sort of the Irish sort of enthusiasm. Yeah, yeah. This is going to be our tournament. We're going to do a Greece in 2004. And obviously just, you know, losing all the games. It's just a disaster.
Yeah, and it got really bad because Spain 4, Republic of Ireland 0, which is a standalone result, isn't bad. But I think when you get into tournament football, lad, and you're losing 4-0, yeah. I mean, that's a whiffer, isn't it?
I remember watching that game and it was, I mean, you know, we'll get on to how good Spain were in this tournament later on, but I kind of felt for the Irish team that night as well, because it was just a masterclass, wasn't it? They just caught Spain on one of those days where everything clicked for them as well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily Ireland's shortcomings, and it was more to do with Spain being unplayable, unbelievable. So, you know, I felt for Republic of Ireland. I really did, because there was that enthusiasm, and you do get... I like the other home nations being there as well.
Yeah.
And I'll always kind of watch other games as well. Same with when Wales were in Euro 2016.
They took it a bit too far, had they?
They went further than England, so part of me was like,
you've
got
to stop there.
Yeah, yeah. But no, yeah, I mean, you know, we saw Spain's dominance in that group again, didn't we, really?
Yeah, and they got through with Italy. Croatia, go on.
Sorry, I was going to say, this is where you start getting resentful now, isn't it?
Towards Spain.
Yeah, yeah, the sort of the mystique's gone.
Yeah.
The sort of the surprise element's all out the window. Domestically or in European sort of club football, they're winning everything and just dominating, and you like getting a bit fed up, and you're like, oh, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know,
Or
it's a bit like someone's playing like a game on the PlayStation, they're having it for too long, and you go, all right, yeah, can I have a go now?
Yeah.
And they won't, they keep going. You're like, we know you're really good at this, but can I have a go now?
In Group D, we saw England, Ukraine, Sweden, and France. Now let's get into what we're really here.
Yes.
England, France. I mean, it's the age-old England going 1-0 up in a game that you don't expect them to go 1-0 up in. And we got a point against France. And then the big one that I think we all remember, where we were, Sweden 2, England 3. An absolute ding-dong game that was, wasn't it? Andy Carroll. Arise, Sir Andy Carroll.
What a goal. It was what a goal.
Do you know,
I do not think there's a minute out of that.
Who put the ball in? Was it Gerrard put the ball in from deep, wasn't it?
Yeah. Great header.
My overriding memory of this game, right?
Go on, Pat.
Is Welbeck's goal, where he sort of fell over and kicked it in.
I don't know, that was a Cruyff, mate.
Yeah, and then there was a debate. I remember the Evening News doing a debate, like a poll. Did he mean it? And like, I was losing my mind because I was such a Welbeck fan. I was like, of course he meant it. He knew what he was doing.
He was straight onto Twitter. I was
to my 8 followers. Like, shouting to my dad on Twitter.
Mario Gomez wouldn't have scored that.
Yeah, like,
that game was classic, wasn't it? So we went 1-0 up, 2-1 Sweden. And then he bought Theo Walcott on as a sub, and he think he scored with like his first touch.
Yeah, quality.
But to the glint of an eye, it looked like he'd scored an amazing volley, didn't it? But it was like a bit deflected. Yeah. I was like, fucking unreal! That's the best goal ever! And it wasn't. And then Danny Welbeck scored the best goal ever scored at a major tournament.
Do you know what? I feel sorry for Theo Walcott as well, because this was like, more or less it, wasn't it, for international football, Theo Walcott? He went, didn't he, in the World Cup in, like, when was it, 2006,
wasn't it?
Yeah, when he was like a child.
When he was a baba.
Yeah, didn't kick a ball, just sort of went so Sven could say, look, I've brought some children.
And then Sven's recently said, oh, I picked him because there was no one else to pick. I was like, I'm sure Jermaine Defoe missed
it.
Darren Bent was the top goal.
Because he didn't say, he took, like, Michael Owen, who had an injury issue.
Took
Theo Walcott, and then Michael Owen collapsed, didn't he, in the middle of a group game.
Defoe
did miss out, you're right. Because I think Defoe was, like, initially...
But Darren Bent was the English top goal scorer. Like, right, Danny, he missed out as well. Who am I going to pick?
So really, was this vindication for Sven at this point? Six years later, and he's like, I knew it.
I always told you he'd come good, eh? Now look at him.
Sven's like, you know why he scored that goal? Because of the experience in 06.
Thank
that's
me. You're welcome.
Yeah. They love that, don't they, as well? Oh, we're taking him for experience for later tournaments. Maybe this is it. This is the master plan.
And then the game to wrap up the group stages, we beat Ukraine. And for the life of me, I can remember where I was for every England game at a major tournament, but I just can't picture this one.
Yeah, what was that goal like?
I'd remember Wayne Rooney, United legend, getting a winner to see us through to the quarterfinals of the Euros, but I can't.
The thing is, as well, is that I think, in a way, like, after that 3-2 against Sweden, I was a little bit spooked by the fact we'd conceded two. Do you know what I mean? And part of me was thinking, you shouldn't be struggling really against Sweden in the group stages. And then when we got to Ukraine, I thought it was a narrow win, and the alarm bells.
Did you start to think that maybe we're not going to win this tournament?
Yeah, do you know when you said, like, my dad's like, when it comes to England, biggest pessimist ever as well, and I'll be there celebrating the goal, and I'll go, yeah, we've let two in against Sweden though. I was like, if we won, he's like, no, it don't matter. I remember in the 2010 World Cup, and like last minute of the game against Algeria, 1-1, and Joe Cole's like shielding the ball, and I was going, come on, and my dad went, think about what we're doing.
That's what you mean. So bad, wasn't it?
He was like, you're shielding the ball.
That tournament was so bad.
Awful.
England was so bad in it.
I don't have that much memory of that Ukraine game.
I can't, for the life of me, think where I was. Sweden game was at Brad Morris's house.
Right.
Lovely lounge for the area.
Great stuff.
What snacks did you have?
Fuck me. Probably...
I
still didn't really drink.
Probably a couple of bloody Stellas, no.
But I was saying,
just the 8 pints for me last night.
First time I ever drank, I went to Reading Festival, which is 4 days, isn't it? And I took 12, if not 16, brothers glass stubbies.
Oh yeah.
And I came back with 3.
Did you?
After four days.
Good lad.
Well done, mate.
Aye.
That's nice. Fucking disappointing that. So England and France progressed, and that takes us to the quarterfinals. Now, I was just looking because it felt like one of them things where England have finished top, but it might not have worked out because I obviously remembered we played Italy. But if we'd have come second, we'd have played Spain. So we were fucked either way.
Yeah.
England, Italy, although it was a 0-0, gents, we were both talking off air. I mean, they absolutely outplayed us, didn't they?
Like, honestly, this was... I'm telling you about my mindset in this game. I'd have been mildly embarrassed if we got through. Genuinely, yeah. I think I'd have been a bit...
It's smash and grabs. Yeah, deserve
I got to a stage where I'd kind of accepted that we're out, and I was like, wow, it's if we get through this, this is such a bonus.
It was, I mean, you could, you know, if you want to put a positive spin on it, say it was a stoic defensive performance, but it was like...
And you were worried because we conceded two against Sweden.
It wasn't great to watch from an England point of view.
But it was, to put a superlative on it, it was the, not emergence of Pirlo, but for, you know, many English fan, just, well, you don't enjoy it at the time, but he was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Mm. We never learned, did we?
No.
We didn't like, because didn't we play him again in the World Cup and he just did the same to us and it was just like...
Oh, the Sterling.
Yeah, he was really good, him, innit? Yeah. Forgot about that.
Balotelli was good in that game, wasn't he, as well?
He had a good tournament, didn't he, Balotelli?
Yeah, he was good, he was really good.
He scored quite a few goals. And
this was the, obviously it was 0-0, went to penalty shootouts, and this was the one where, you know, Pirlo was stepping up against Joe Hart, he was trying to play mind games with him, and
he was doing the noises,
Italian thing ever, just chipped him.
Do you remember Joe Hart doing the faces?
He always used to do my injury. He used to do that thing under the 21s. Do you remember he got booked for it? I remember he got suspended for the final thing because he was giving grief to players in the penalty shootout for England under 21s. He's like, kids, what are you doing? Pack it in.
It is a mad idea because you often think to yourself, if you're a goalie in a penalty shootout, you should do whatever to put someone off. But
I don't know
if I'd be doing that because the cameras are on. And I'd be thinking...
You'd pick your moments, I think. You see Pirlo and you think...
Yeah, and also you look like an idiot when they score. It's one of them, innit? You better just playing it safe. If you don't do it and they score, you don't look bad.
Yeah.
But if you do that and then they score, you're just like a bit of a muppet.
I just think, you know, if you're a keeper, you know, in a penalty shootout, I just approach it with a load of confidence. Maybe a little go up to him, a little word beforehand. That's enough for me.
And you
psych him out. But he's, if you've never seen what we're talking about here, he basically, he's pulling faces and he's screaming. And the microphone's picked it up as well, didn't it?
It does look to me, it just looks like, of the two players that are nervous, it's the goalkeeper. Pirlo's like
overcompensating,
sighing, rolling his eyes. Are we done? Can I take this now? Can we just score?
Pirlo's like a bouncer, like dealing with the drunk player.
Yeah, right. Just get him on his line. Come on, I've got things to do.
So he chipped him down the middle. England went out, and that was the end of that one.
The two missed penalties as well. Obviously, we always have that thing with tournaments. Whenever I think that it's become such a thing now that England players fear taking them. Probably not as much in recent, because since we won that one in the World Cup in 2018, that we needed that.
Yeah.
We needed it. But I think these players always worried about being demonised by the media then if they missed it.
Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, we've seen it with so many players in the past. And obviously, I really felt for Ashley Young and Ashley Cole who missed one as well.
And this was the start. Let's talk about how this was sort of like when Twitter became a big thing. This was the start of trolling as well.
Yeah.
They got absolutely hammered, some racist stuff as well. It was awful. It was awful to see as well because it's like, you know, you can't blame them for us not beating Italy. Yeah.
No. And especially when we played that bad as well. Do you know what I mean?
We're blaming those guys. It's like, it was ridiculous and it was sad. But yeah, I think anyone who watches that with us, even a mildly objective eye, looks like we were lucky against the penalties, let alone lose the penalty.
Even St. George would have a good day trying to say it.
Do you think he was... I suppose it was his first tournament, but I thought we were terrible in that game.
Whose first tournament, sorry?
Hodgson.
Oh, Hodgson.
So I thought it was horrendous. I mean, it got worse for you.
There was almost a feeling of, because there'd been all this chaos with Capello quitting and the Terry fallout with Rio and all that stuff, that almost he'd steadied the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd got through the group. And it was okay. And
it was a bit last minute, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was like, oh, he's done a decent job sort of thing, which when you look at it with a sort of an analytical eye at the games and the performances and the squad, I mean, everything that you can look at from a manager, it wasn't that good, was it?
No.
It was just like, you know, it's on paper, it looks a lot better than if you can actually remember those games.
Yeah.
They weren't great.
But to be fair, if we'd have got through that, we'd have played Germany in the semi-final. Would have got battered, and then
it would have just been a complete fluke. But what would happen now is we'd be sat here talking about how great that tournament was when we got to the semi-final. We would, wouldn't we? There'd be like documentaries on it, and like, you know, look back at that great time 9 years ago when we got to the semi-finals.
It would be a pinch yourself moment.
It would, wouldn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Sir Stuart Downing,
and all you had to do is win. What, you were one penalty shootout away from having a documentary about yourself.
That's it, isn't it? That's how we sort of do get those nostalgic glasses on.
Right, we're just going to have a short break. We'll be back in a minute.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We will do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks.
Hello, I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't. I actually love interaction with people.
I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
This season, Live Score is the only place where you can watch every single UEFA Champions League game for free. That means more goals, more unforgettable drama, more end-to-end action. And whether you're watching on your phone or tablet or casting to your TV, the free Live Score app gives you even more ways to watch. Live Score, the new home of the UEFA Champions League. It's more than a score. Download now on the App Store or Google Play.
When you bet fair on football, you get daily rewards. So any day can be a big deal. So whether it's a lower league match day, a top flight derby day, or a Champions League superstar showdown day, this week we're doubling our daily rewards. Get a €10 free bet when you bet €20 worth of multiples or bet builders. Double daily rewards because we're Betfair.
Max €10 free bet per day. Each bet must have at least one selection of minimum odds of 1.5 or 1-2 or more. Free bet valid 24 hours on multiples or bet builders. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Visit gamblingcare.ie.
So England went home in the other quarterfinals. Portugal beat Czech Republic. Ronaldo scoring. I think he does quite well. Germany beat Greece 4-2. That sort of romantic story is over. Samaras scoring there, right?
Yeah, you know, get the name Samaras.
And then Spain beat France, which obviously left us with the final four, gents, of Portugal versus Spain and Germany versus Italy. Both good games, but for different reasons.
I mean, the overriding memory for me from Portugal versus Spain is the fact that I don't want to fast forward throughout the whole game, but I will go to the penalties that Ronaldo didn't get to take one.
He'd have been up on fifth, wouldn't
yeah.
he?
Was it, yeah, why?
Because the tactic, if you can call it that, from Portugal was to let him go last. But by the time it got to him, they were already out. So he didn't take one.
I don't get that, man.
No. It's, I mean, you, surely you put your best penalty takers.
Yeah, but I think he instates, you know, the Real Madrid one for like Ledesma. He'd had a shit game and then he got to take the winning penalty. Yeah.
Oh, so he'd done like a John Terry scenario. I'll take this one. I think
you're right. Right. I've seen him do that before. That makes sense
because I remember a lot of the press was about him.
Yeah. Yeah,
not him doing that, not the manager, but him. So, and he does what he wants, doesn't he, for Portugal?
Well, he picks it as well. Do you remember when they won it in a later episode that we'll talk about? Like, he's going round. I think he grabs like João Moutinho and Moutinho's I don't want to do it. He's like, no, you take one.
You good? Obviously,
that's a big. I mean,
it's a disastrous call, really. It's
crazy, right. Especially because Spain missed their first penalty as well. Alonso missed theirs. Yeah,
there's a thing about some research into it, isn't it? Like, if you miss the first penalty, you are over all the penalty shootouts they've done, you are more likely to win.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I can't tell you who did it, where I heard it from, so you can just take that.
Sounds true to me.
That sounds solid.
Solid research.
Fully backed up.
But there's another thing as well. I was speaking. I was doing some stuff with William Gallas, 2006 World Cup final. They didn't know what the penalty order was going into it. And he said players were just taking off their shoes and socks to say, like, I don't want to take one. And who was the manager?
Dominic, yeah.
He came up to him and was like, will you take one? And he was like, and he was down to take the fifth penalty.
Really?
William Gallas.
That's crazy.
Because it almost worked for France, but it did sound like that tournament was chaos again.
Yeah.
Players doing what they wanted, taking over almost. Dominic.
I always find it quite weird that, because obviously when you get to the semi, you know, the quarters, the semis and the final, when you know, penalties become more of a, you know, high stakes, kind of, you know, there's so much riding on it. And you think, you've heard in the past where managers are going around going, I need five names.
Yeah.
I'm like, have you not had a chat before?
It was weird as well. I think it was England in 2000, it might have been 2006, where they said the over-practice penalties. Yeah.
They've been like Carragher on to take.
Yeah, because they were doing it. He said they were doing it like an hour after training every game, just doing penalties. And he said by the end of it, you're just like bored and you're not, you know.
I'd feel confident now with our crop, just because, I don't know, just the way they hit the ball.
Yeah, I think I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. It seems like
we missed our last penalty we took at England. Depends if Jordan Henderson's going to put himself.
Yeah, he said
no, he's putting himself fifth.
Yeah, I'll say this.
Like Ronaldo.
Yeah.
The semi-final saw Italy beat Germany 2-1. Quite comprehensive. Balotelli at it again.
He had a great tournament. Yeah. Really good, and it was just so exciting to see the emergence of a player that seemed at the time just to have everything. He looked like the complete package, didn't he? He was exciting to watch. great goalscorer, strong, fast. He had a fantastic tournament, and you know, it was the glimpse of what was to come, I suppose, with him.
And then we get to the final. We spoke a lot about Spain. This just gets absolutely crazy, doesn't it? It starts off quite a mild affair. David Silva gets a header in, and then and the second goal, there's a run from Jordi Alba that I don't know how was not picked up. Everyone talks about the ball that Xavi put through, but he's around six defenders, and then they're like, how's he got through? He scores, and then, yeah, it gets a bit messy at the end, doesn't it? Spain 4, Italy 0.
I mean, and let's not forget, that's a good Italy team as well.
Especially defensively.
Yeah, like Bonucci and Chiellini and Buffon in goal. And it's like you got obviously Pirlo. It's not like this is a sort of, you know, a below par Italy team. It's a very good, they just absolutely put to the sword. That's probably, you know, you'd have to go a long way to find a better performance in a final by, you know, in a major international tournament than the Spanish one there.
It's brutal, that. It's just absolutely just the killer instinct of, I mean, how... That's madness to have that in an international
final.
It's
like you were saying, Will, it's your half-time winner from Alba. That is over, isn't it? It's like, Italy sat in the changing rooms. Do we have to come out for the second half? Because is there any point?
You should see Pirlo, he's shell-shocked. He's going, half-time winner.
Formality.
It's done. But Spain are the Euros champions, and then that sort of ends the era of dominance for them as we know it for now. But as we said, we couldn't really enjoy it when it got to 2012, could we? Because it was just getting a bit like, there's other teams about.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, you're looking at the final like that, there's nothing, even if it seems boring that Spain are winning stuff all the time, you still got to give the respect that it deserves.
I mean, I think Mata came on, didn't he? A sub.
Yeah, and Torres came on.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you're almost taking the piss. Do you want a game? Do you want a goal?
Yeah,
go on then. Go and get yourself a goal.
But even in that semi-final, their penalty takers, Xabi Alonso, Iniesta, Pique, Ramos, Fabregas. Yeah. Like, and there's at least three or four more players there and you're confident would have scored penalties.
And don't blink, you know, Alonso misses and the rest of them just score.
Yeah.
It's like not an issue.
Who was your favourite player for this tournament, gents? Who really stands out? I think I know yours.
I'm with Balotelli.
Yeah,
I think so. Obviously, the Spain team... It's weird that we're almost... This shows how good Spain were in this era, that I'm almost discounting them. Because I'm just going, they were on a whole different planet themselves. But I'm going to go for Balotelli, yeah. Like I said, just his goals. I just think there was a bit of a buzz about him as well. You know, even in that England game.
He was the player, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was just so much excitement around him. And I was thinking, God, this guy's going to go to the very top here. Like, he seemed to have, like I said before, absolutely everything. So, yeah, I'm going Balotelli.
What about you?
This was the first time that I sort of noticed Pirlo, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I wasn't one of these, it was just like, I've always rated Pirlo. Yeah. I've always watched him.
His early stuff. Yeah.
I was glued to, yeah, I love this early work. Glued to Serie A, me. I wasn't. So it was like, actually, because he was never in that conversation, really, was he? It was like Xavi and Iniesta, Scholes, were the sort of playmaker, midfielders that everyone used to rave about.
Mm.
And then Pirlo wasn't in that, but then after this tournament, he was. So it was like when you sort of sat up and noticed how good he was.
Yeah, phenomenal. I'm going to go for Xavi. I think looking back on it this time, like you said, that's when you start to appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, a midfielder passing it left and right at the time, not that exciting. But with my Statman Dave hat on, it is a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, I think, like you say, the more like... Just the more football you're watching, obviously you were a bit older in this tournament as well, Will. I'm speaking to like I'm your granddad.
You're allowed to stay up for this one. Yeah, okay? We'll let you watch this
great,
one.
Great, Will, I loved it.
No, but like you start having the appreciation for those for sideways passes more than you do. You know, it used to just be a striker who scored. You didn't really care about the assists and all that. But I think in this
assists
tournament...
Assists weren't even like a thing back in the day, were they?
I remember when I was
you can get fantasy that. Premier League points. Ooh, mama. What was the most iconic moment for you, whether that was a match or something, you know, Joe Hart shouting at Pirlo? What sort of really stood out for that tournament? To be honest, gents, I know it's always with my England cap on, but that Sweden-England game.
That was one of the best England games.
We showed them Swedes.
No, do you know what? In terms of excitement, because it was just back and forth, end to end. And it's weird because we didn't play exciting football under Roy Hodgson at all.
No.
But never. That game just had that energy about it, didn't it? And I don't, again, out watching it on holiday or whatever, you know, Ed's gone, different
but
vibe.
That's nice as well, isn't it?
Yeah. He was all kicking off in the fishing village in Greece, you know what I mean? they start dreams.
Bloody hipsters!
They start dreams that they were going to, you know, kind of win it again after 2004. And I was going, it's not happening, boys, it's not happening. We just beat Sweden 3-2. Do you know what? That Edda, Andy Carroll, Edda, moment of magic.
I get it as well, because when you saw the likes of Carroll and Welbeck celebrating together, and I think they've been in the under-21s, and you were thinking, actually, this is the dawn of an era.
And I'll
wrong, but we.
It's like something special taking shape here now.
It's weird to say it now, isn't it? But like at the time, like Welbeck's playing for United. Carroll was just signed for 35 million. Yeah.
And even like, you know, sort of to look at the other, like Walcott and Oxlade Chamberlain's only a kid, and it's like, you know what, there's other players that have still got something left in
it. Rooney still had loads of time.
Exactly. And then it's just, it didn't happen, did it?
Went to shit. Did enjoy Euro 2012 overall. Gents, have you enjoyed yourself, Ad?
Yeah, I loved it. You know what, looking back again and sort of revisiting it, it does, even though it was ultimately a disappointment for England, just being able to. Also, seen a couple of different names in that squad, like you said there, Jay, Andy Carroll and the likes. It was just something a bit different, wasn't it, really? And I think it felt like a little bit of a cobbled together squad, and it was a bit rushed in the sense of you know, the preparation for England. But so we never really expected to win it. We
were,
and obviously, Spain masterclass again. Good tournament overall.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to look back on it now than it was. At the time, you're still fuming around
penalties.
Why did we get rid of him? It's ridiculous. And actually look at it and you go, actually, like the Balotelli shout's a good one, because I was sitting there with my night out and fuming. Balotelli's rubbish. Yeah. But it was such a good tournament for him. And it's almost, look back at it a little bit. I know he had a great career, but you're almost like, what could have been? Because there was an amazing player there that perhaps didn't reach those heights.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He had one or two seasons where he was unplayable, and then he had like eight where he just more or less tossed it off a bit.
If you could have maintained that standard.
What a joke.
That level.
He did what to get in the squad? Fucking hell. If he could have
maintained that standard for the years after that tournament, he'd be on a different level.
Yeah, because remember, I so went to Liverpool, he just sort of give up, hadn't he?
And that was it. From then onwards, he was never recaptured, did he? So yeah, it's a shame, because you know, when you look back at that you think, like you said, Jay, what could have been? And you must look back at that tournament now and think, God, that was unbelievable.
Yeah,
that.
He was mint.
Well, there we go. That's the end of Euro 2012. We've tossed that one off. The winners were Spain. And now we're on to the rest of the Euros. Massive thanks to Jay Motti and Adam Brown. We'll see you next week for Euro 2016.
It sound right, boy.
Crowd Network. A place where you belong.
This season, Live Score is the only place where you can watch every single UEFA Champions League game for free. That means more goals, more unforgettable drama, more end-to-end action. And whether you're watching on your phone or tablet or casting to your TV, the free Live Score app gives you even more ways to watch. Live Score, the new home of the UEFA Champions League. It's more than a score. Download now on the App Store or Google Play.
Podcast Network.